Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Dr. John Garvey. John, you're very, very welcome.
Thank you.
Now, you are a consultant respiratory physician and clinical director of the Sleep Laboratory at St Vincent's University Hospital here in Dublin. And we've brought you in to talk about snoring.
Yes.
Is it a big part of your work at the sleep clinic?
Yes, it is, because the most common respiratory condition is actually obstructive sleep apnea, and snoring is one of the main symptoms. So a lot of the patients that I see, that is one of the main reasons that they've actually come to the hospital.
Do we know how many people are estimated to have?
All of us will snore at some stage in our life. It doesn't mean that there's necessarily something wrong. So if you've got a head cold, for example, it's not uncommon for people.
Tonsillitis,
if you're unwell.
Allergies.
If women, when they're pregnant, are more likely to snore as well. So
menopause, perimenopause.
That has a factor as well, and makes obstructive sleep apnea more common for women. So all of these factors come into play. Weight gain as well, alcohol consumption, smoking, they can all have an impact on snoring.
So it seems, John, that there's a broad spectrum. That, like everything in healthcare, or like a lot of things rather in healthcare, there can be a spectrum. So let's start at the more sort of harmless end of things. What are some of the benign or maybe temporary causes of snoring?
So, as you mentioned, allergies are quite common and can impact on snoring. So snoring is actually turbulence of airflow, which is...
What actually happens? Causes it?
Yeah, so you're generating noise in the upper airway. So anything that affects the upper airway and makes the tissues there floppier, or if there's scarring, or if there's collapsibility of any part of the upper airway, you get turbulence of airflow, and that just manifests as noise. So for some people, it only happens when they lie on their back, because the jaw hinges in that way, and when they lie on their side.
That's why so many people push their partners over on their side.
Absolutely.
when they're trying to stop them. And actually, presumably it is partners or others who play a big role in reporting snoring, because they're listening to it.
Yes, so it's
a
nuisance.
Or they're worried about it.
Yeah, they're worried, and it's also a nuisance symptom for people. So patients themselves may find themselves on the couch or in the spare room, that may drive them themselves. But for others, if their partner is distressed, their quality of life is affected by the snoring, and they're keen for a resolution to this, and might seek help because pushing the partner over on their side doesn't work anymore. It's not just when they have alcohol, they're snoring all the time, and they may seek medical advice then.
And obviously at the more upper end of the scale, that obstructive sleep apnea, and that is, you know, which can be indicative of more serious health problems. What is driving that, or driving those increased numbers of it?
So the biggest driver is obesity. So over the past few decades, we've had a huge surge in obesity as a disease. So we've a large proportion of our population have obesity, and that's impacting on the number of patients that are being referred to us now with obstructive sleep apnea.
Does age impact?
As people get older, male sex increases the risk as well of having the condition. And there's also an association with cardiovascular disease. So untreated obstructive sleep apnea is a risk factor for cardiovascular disease. So it's not uncommon for people, if they're newly diagnosed with high blood pressure, if they're not dipping their blood pressure at night on a 24-hour blood pressure monitor with their GP, the GP might often send a referral to a sleep laboratory for assessment.
And in some way, John, we've all sort of become our own sort of self-diagnosed sleep laboratories, because if you're wearing wearable tech, if you're using those sleep apps, they're telling you everything you're doing during the night, snoring and whatever else, it tunes into that. How reliable are those as indicators, and when do you need to go and get it checked out?
So With regard to the wearable tech, there have improved quite a lot. So
some have even got FDA approval.
So yeah. The Apple Watch and the Samsung Watch in the last year have been approved by the FDA to give people alerts. So I've even seen patients this week who have come in and said that their Apple Watch has said that you possibly have obstructive sleep apnea. Now, those watches can miss obstructive sleep apnea, so they're not completely sensitive to the condition. But if they're telling you that you have obstructive sleep apnea, they're pretty accurate. So with regard to when people should seek help, if basic lifestyle measures like avoiding smoking, cutting back on alcohol, watching your weight aren't helping, if sleeping on your side isn't enough, if you're disturbing your partner, or if you've got other health concerns, that you're feeling tired all the time, that if you've got new cardiovascular problems and you have a concern that this could be related to obstructive sleep apnea, then that's the time to actually seek
And do they still have to go and spend the night with you? Do they have to sleep overnight, or is it changed?
So the technology that we use has changed. So the gold standard is still to spend the night in hospital and have what we call full polysomnography, where you're having a brain tracing and your eye movements are being looked at. So you can tell if somebody's asleep, what stage of sleep they're in. So that is the gold standard. But we now can give patients devices to take home with them to wear. We also have wearable technology that are coming in, medical grade wearable technology in this space that you connect with your phone via Bluetooth. So the diagnostic element is moving closer to patients all the time.
Can I ask you, I know we're still sort of only really at the beginning of the journey with this kind of blockbuster GLP-1 drugs, you know, for Ozempic, Wegovy, all of these that are actually targeting weight loss. Are you seeing anything in terms of their impact, particularly on obstructive sleep apnea?
Absolutely. So I've actually seen patients use these drugs because they've had diabetes or they've engaged in studies that have been run in my hospital over the past 7 or 8 years. With regard to Eli Lilly's drug, tirzepatide, that has been licensed now in the US for the treatment of obstructive sleep apnea associated with obesity. So we know these drugs work to help people to manage their obesity. Obstructive sleep apnea for many people is a complication of their obesity, but they're at risk of other complications. There's actually over 200 complications. So there's focus now on what are the conditions that really give real benefit to patients. And for obstructive sleep apnea, it's very attractive for people if they can lose sufficient weight that they no longer have to wear a mask, a CPAP mask.
Yeah. Is the stigma reducing, John?
I think it is, but I think one of the things that we need to do in the medical space is actually differentiate between preventative measures. So diet and exercise is actually lifestyle advice for everybody. It's not just for people that are carrying weight. And differentiate when we need to treat patients with obesity and reduce their risk of complications.
And certainly to come forward if you have any worries about yourself or that someone else in your life. But for now, thank you very, very much, Dr. John Garvey.